Fred Film Radio, Turin Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, Torino Film Festival. I'm Angela Cerbian, here with Garth Jennings, director of Sing 2. Good morning.
Good morning.
We had a wonderful evening yesterday. Oh, yeah, I was.
I can imagine how happy I was.
I can imagine.
It was wonderful.
Yeah. You know, the end, the people was cheering, standing up and clapping.
Yes.
And it was. No, because it's a very uplifting and motivating film.
Yeah. It's not a sad movie. There are sad moments in the movie.
Yeah, well.
But the whole point, it's called Sing. I mean, it should be, its ambitions are to, you know, lift you up.
Yeah. I was very, very happy that you opened with Let's Go Crazy by Prince, which is one of my favorite artists ever. I want to ask you, how did you choose the song? That song, all the songs.
Well, that one, I can tell you, was... what would be the most amazing song to open with? And I was a huge Prince fan growing up. I was a member of the fan club. I went to concert court. You know, I know everything about this man, and I love his music. It means the world to me. So to open with a Prince song was a personal favorite, but also one that I felt, you know, my whole team, all of us, Chris Miller, Dandry, all of us just loved it. And then it was a case of just trying to find the right visual idea to you know, go with that, which was Alice in Wonderland.
What an idea, because it's really astounding how big and how in your face it is. The very beginning is gigantic.
But it also feels like the kind of show you might see in a small theater. Mm-hmm. You know, Alice in Wonderland is a show that you see all the time, and that's it. So it fits the whole opening, but all the songs in the movie are driven by the story. So very often, a lot of the musical ideas are being written into the script as I go along.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they change, because you'll write in an idea like Goodbye Yellow Brick Road was the right emotional idea and actually was the song that stuck. But then another scene when they're going on a long bus journey, I had one song in mind and I thought, I know this is going to work. But then when we put it to picture, it just didn't work. Sometimes it doesn't work. And so you have to find alternatives that do the right job, but in ways you don't expect.
Now, how long is the creative process for a film like this?
Oh, God. Well, this one has been 4 years' work, just over 4 years. And it's taken, there's nearly over 500 people that have worked on it.
Oh, yeah. There is a very cinematic quality to it in terms of visual. Yes. Everything is wide, so the frames are wide. Everything is big, and there's a lot of musicals, a lot of Bugsy Berkeley feel to it. Were you a fan? Were you?
Oh, huge!
Do you want to convey this feeling into the film?
Scale, yes. I mean, the story is telling me to go big because the ambitions of the characters are enormous. They're very small characters at the beginning, and they live in a little town, but they're trying to make it in the big leagues. They're trying to fulfill their potential. Mm-hmm. And so it naturally gets bigger. So the camera has to step back because the scenarios, the scenes, the action, everything gets bigger. So you have to allow for that, make room for it. Yeah.
The choice of the closing song by Bono was very funny because, you told us yesterday night.
Yeah.
How did it happen? Can you tell us again?
Sure. The whole movie ends with the show. That's not spoiling the movie for you. It's like a Rocky, you know it's going to end in a fight. It's just how it ends. But then once the show is finished, a new U2 song comes in, one that was written for our movie. And that started back in 2019 when I first spoke to Bono about playing the part of Clay Calloway, the lion. And after this lovely long conversation, he suggested that there was a song, you know, involved. It could be a song here. And I honestly thought he just meant, like, yeah, there could be a song. Like, yeah, that would be amazing. But nobody talked about it. And then a few months later, he came to the recording process to do his lines. And it went great. And at the end of it, he just said, pulled out his phone. And he just said, oh, I wrote that song, by the way.
By the way,
you know, kind of like, here's that song. And he played it off his phone. And as I said last night, at first I was thinking, oh, my gosh. What if I hate this song? What am I going to do with my face? How am I going to... how do you tell him? But literally within seconds, I was like, well, this is tonally perfect. And he'd done everything we talked about, but like better. And then when he played it back later on a big sound system, I honestly found it very emotional. Because firstly, because Bono's just written me a song.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Which is the first thing.
That's powerful.
All, you know?
Secondly, this is the end of the movie. It's the whole end of the movie. It's going to work. And it was all the feelings I wanted from the film. And I got kind of emotional. I had to stop myself from looking too ridiculous in front of this wonderful man.
Yeah, I mean,
like, I will always
be
grateful.
You were in front of Bono,
so yeah, you have to hold it together.
Makes sense.
Yeah. It still is when I hear it. I'm taken back to that moment when he said, "Here's the song." And he's an extraordinary man. A real gift. I can't say enough about him, yeah.
Listen, Garth, how does a director of a film like this work with the real actors that give voices to the characters?
Right, yeah.
What's the most complicated?
Well, it's all complicated because everyone assumes we have them all in a room together, but they're never recorded together. You record one person at a time. Mm-hmm. And because I'm often updating the scenes or changing them, you re-record them maybe 10, 12 times over a period of a few years. So one scene might have 5 characters in it, and they were all recorded in different places over different years. There are some lines from one character where the beginning of the line was recorded in, I know, 2018, and the last part was recorded in 2020. You know, it is a mess, and it is like a jigsaw puzzle, and you're constantly taking pieces out and putting pieces back in. And so my job is to keep it all in my head and in the movie, and so that it all fits together at the end. Yeah.
And how did you coach them, if you do coach them, in terms of, I mean, they are acting, even if they're not acting physically, acting.
So. Yeah. It's very much about me just giving them the information and the energy of who else is in the scene. Or, like, you know, the obvious example would be, okay, in this line, you are running for your life and you're on the telephone and you're in a big crowded area. So you're running, you're on a phone and you're shouting. I mean, that might be as specific as that. But most of the time, I'm reading the other parts of the scene as the other characters. So I'm trying to match the energy and the tone of what the other actors are doing or will be doing. So it's just sort of, and also allowing the actors to explore their instincts. Very often they'll read it perfectly, but then they'll have another idea of what to do, and that will be fantastic too. So you have to be very specific and then open to improvisation. And they're all they're amazingly talented, all of them. So they will give you what you want, but also more than you ask for. Yeah.
And then they have to be available any time for years.
Well, that's the trouble. It's not about them being available. It's us being ready to catch them between, like, if you've got Scarlett Johansson going from, like, beating up a planet, you know, aliens, to going to Marriage Story, you've got, like, a little window to grab 2 hours in New York. You have to be ready to go, get it. And, it's not about them being free. It's about us being ready to get them when they're free. Yeah.
Listen, the building up of the choreography of the film, because you know, there are musical numbers like musical theater.
Yes.
So choreography is needed.
Yeah.
How does choreography work in the world of animation?
Well, I suppose there are a number of ways you can do it. One of them that is used in other movies is motion capture, where they put a suit on somebody, and that the as they move, that movement is recorded by the computer. We haven't done that. What we did was we worked with a choreographer called Sherry Silver, who is extraordinary. You should look her up. She is, you'll know her work anyway because she did the choreography for This Is America. Okay. And she would work together with real dancers, and we would film them very informally, just with our iPhones and cameras, and that choreography would inform the animation. So the animators were able to use that as a kind of inspiration, as a starting point, but then interpret that. But dance is another language for me. I don't know it very well. I just adore it. And so to work with somebody who speaks that language, who's physically able to just create those routines is fantastic. Yeah, yeah.
One thing that I wanted to ask you is the how do you relate with the fact that your film is going to be dubbed in many countries? So the voices of the character that you chose, specific actors for a specific character because of their tone, their voice, their qualities. How do you relate with the fact that those voices are going to be translating into other languages, and do you have a say on that?
It's a fascinating process. Firstly, a movie like Sing is for a big audience, and so I love the fact that we can work with other talented artists to bring the story to life in different languages. That would be a shame if we couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And I love like being here in Italy and meeting the cast that are doing it here. They're just fantastic. And they bring a new dimension to it. The most important thing is, do you believe that that voice fits that character? Yeah. Do you believe? Obviously, they're already chosen because they're in the running because they're talented. But do you believe that's coming out of that? It's amazing. You can hear the most brilliant actor, brilliant voice, but you just don't believe it fits the...
Yeah, because they don't match.
No. But everyone we've been looking into and working with has been incredible. And it's so interesting, you know, all around the world, going to Japan and different countries and Germany and hearing the choices that people have made and are suggesting. It's fascinating. I love that it opens up the movie. Do you know what I mean? I love that it makes it open to every age group and every nationality.
And actually, it's a film that works for children and parents, because there was, I mean, yesterday night there was a father with a little daughter just sitting in the row in front of me, and they were enjoying the film as well.
Yes.
Which is a good accomplishment.
But I'm sure you were the same, like people like us who were in love with cinema usually fell in love with it when we were kids. Mm-hmm. You know, we usually were children and somebody took us to the movies. And it was that being taken to the movies and having this experience where you're not just watching something wonderful, but you're watching it with all these other people. That is such a precious experience for me personally. And I know a lot of people who love movies too have that same thing, that if we can do that with Sing, if we can give people that sort of collective feeling of like embracing the audience... Mm-hmm. That is the dream. That's what this film is all about. Yeah.
My last question: what drawn you to animation films? Because you didn't start with that.
No, I didn't. I'd always played around with animation when I was a kid. Very bad little animated films, and then even at art school, I was doing a lot of animated films and short films, because animation was a way I could just, you know, make a film on a table. You know, it's cheap.
At home.
Yeah, but you could tell a story. But I loved it, and I've always been inspired by animation. In England, there was Aardman making films like The Wrong Trousers with Wallace and Gromit. I think they're some of the greatest films ever made. Mm. And some of those early Pixar films, they blew my mind. They still do. I just can't resist something that can do so much with storytelling. I mean, how, in a way, the answer is really, why wouldn't you want to make an animated film?
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? It's like, it's such an extraordinary thing to see these characters come to life. And I remember the only experience I had that's similar is when I used to work with the Jim Henson Company, and we did some projects together, and seeing those puppets come to life and live and breathe, that was magic. And I feel a similar sense of magic working in animation. It's beautiful. And I think that can translate to the audience. They can be just swept away by what really are just pixels.
Yeah.
There's no one there, you know. And but it's a beautiful magic trick.
So basically, you are Buster Moon. Looking at the creation coming up and building itself.
Naive, a little bit arrogant.
A dreamer.
Yeah, dreamer, absolutely. But also not afraid to tell a few lies in order to get where I need to go. So, maybe I have that in common.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Jenny, the director of Sing 2 here at the Torino Film Festival. I'm Angelo Cerbi for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.